And so we're going to be in John chapter 13 today. John chapter 13. While you're flipping there, I'm going to do something super unprecedented. I'm actually going to walk down here for just a second. I was doing a funeral yesterday, and I left my Bible at the funeral home. And so some of their gracious workers there, who also attend here, texted me yesterday that they were holding my Bible hostage. And so I'm going to pick that up so that way I can have it, that way I can have it as well. But so if you aren't aware, Sarah and I help with the youth here, and we have one pretty big qualm about it with them. It's particularly the boys, but if you've ever had a sleepover with like your kids and their friends, you know what a group of middle schoolers who have hung out for a while smell like, especially when they're running really hard to impress all of the girls in the games and some of those things. And then all of a sudden, the youth leader, Joe, also takes his shoes off and the smell doubles. And it's just something that Sarah and I have learned to adapt with. It's tough being the two best-smelling people in a room, okay? It's tough. But what we're going to see today as we start to talk about the discipline of service is that Jesus is going to exemplify something in this exact situation where he's in this room with all of these people. And so in John chapter 13, it starts off, it says that it was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he had said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." So we have Jesus here in this situation. They've just walked over 2 miles to get here. So we have 2 miles in the hot sun walking through all of this dirt, and there's these feet, right? All of a sudden, we're in a room with all of the middle school boys, shoes off, and it just smells. Okay, we're in this situation now, and something about the foot washing back then is that they said that sometimes the wives and the kids would wash the feet, but that would be out of an act of love. It wasn't even a requirement. And so back then, there were two types of slaves. There were the Jewish slaves and the Gentile slaves. The Jewish slaves wouldn't even be the ones to wash the feet. This was a job for the Gentile slaves. So washing feet was something that was done only by the lowest of the lows in that society. The women and the children weren't even doing the washing of the feet. The Jewish slaves weren't even washing feet. It was simply just for the Gentile slaves to do. So here's Jesus now in this room. They've just walked multiple miles in the hot sun, dirty feet, and he's going to be washing their feet. What we also catch in there is that he also highlights how that not all of you are clean. So he already knows that Judas is going to betray him. And that's actually in the next section of John 13, if you were to keep reading. But so yet, then again, here he's going to wash the feet of someone that he knows is ultimately going to betray him. And those are some of the questions then that we have to start to ask ourselves of, well, if we're in that situation, you know, I'm up here questioning, all right, if the youth told me I had to start to wash their feet in that setting, like, I might pull the pastor card on that one. You know, there's some other helpers willing to do it. Not you, honey. Okay, no. You get the pass with me. But in those moments, what we see is that Jesus didn't remove all authority and leadership. So Jesus, remember, we've been talking about even last week with the submission and being the leaders and the authority, is that he didn't lose any of this. He wasn't like, oh, hey, there isn't any of that. He was just showing of, if you want authority and leadership, it starts with this. It starts with being able to humble yourselves even lower than what the Gentile slaves would have been and washing people's feet. So he changed the entire approach to what authority and leadership looked like in that time. And then he also, if you remember, when they were arguing about who's the best, and he says, well, it'll be the least among you, and that whoever's last will be first, that this is what it looks like. If we want to take Jesus' words and put them into practical applications of, okay, what does it mean to be the least? What does it mean to look like that? It's this right here, where I'm going to do a job that no one would want to do, where I'm going to do the jobs that are designed for other people who don't have the authority and the leadership that I do. Jesus is changing all of that. And what we see is that, well, as a result of it, he didn't get a promotion. He didn't look at him with any different authority, but I bet what they did was, that's probably a leader I'd want to follow. If he's going to be willing to start to wash my feet and start to change some of these things, I'm going to have to start to do that too if I want to keep up with him. So what we're going to see as we dive into this discipline of service is that ultimately it starts to become more of a lifestyle as opposed to just like a specific thing. In the book that we've been going through along with this, The Celebration of Disciplines, he talks about two different types of authority. And in this authority, he talks about the worldly and the spiritual authority. That worldly authority and spiritual authority are two very distinct things. I'm learning now. So if you can't tell, I'm the one that did the slides this week, because those words are a lot smaller than usual as I am piecing together now. So, oh, you can still read that, right? Can the back of the room still read those? Yeah, okay, good. All the back of the room has glasses too, so it's totally fine. But what we see from worldly authority is that it tells us of, you get the authority, the higher up the ladder you move. Right? It starts off in school. The more popular you are, the more say you have. Then it starts with work. The better your title, the more letters that you have after your name, that's the authority with which you have. We all have totem poles at work, right? High man on the totem pole makes all of the calls. That's the leader with all of the authority. It's telling you to get the promotion, go get the accolades, the awards, all of those things. But in reality, what spiritual authority is telling you is to grab the towel, to start to wash people's feet, to start to do the jobs that no one else is going to want to do. That if you want real leadership and authority in your life, it starts by becoming the least and serving everyone. What he also talks about with the spiritual authority is that there's the liberation, there's the freedom in serving when you don't get anything in return. Because we all know that people like to be the, oh, well, I'll pat your back, you pat mine, right? Like, I'll help you with this, but you help me with this. But in all, you know, and there's this freedom that when we're serving with nothing in return, and that's what comes with the spiritual authority of being served. Because we've all had that one time in our lives where we've been served and nothing was in return, where they were just doing it out of the goodness of their heart and how that felt in that moment of, I don't even have to do anything in return. They care about me enough to want to do this for me. So we see off the bat, yet again, here's another discipline that has a different approach than the worldly approach to it. So the world's going to tell you, get the promotions, climb up the ladder, get to the top, and then you'll be able to change things. But what spiritual authority is telling you is just start serving where you're at. Make it a part of who you are. There's going to be two types of service that we're looking at now. And so there's going to be self-righteous service and true service. And so self-righteous service is going to be the not so good approach. And what we're going to see from true service is a complete opposite to it. So when we look at a self-righteous type of service, well, it comes from human effort. It comes from human effort. And in these service things, there's times where we're making sure of like, okay, this is when we're going to do it. This is how we're going to do it. All of these things. We're planning things. Now, again, let's back up. There's nothing wrong with planning things. Okay, you're going to see the difference here in just a little bit. But so, yes, you will still plan things when serving. We calculate how and when to serve. We only serve in big ways if there's going to be big applause, if there's going to be people are going to know that we're doing it, or, hey, this is a part of something big, right? I'm going to get on board because this is a big popular movement. That's when I'm going to serve. Or the self-righteous service, it requires the external rewards and the results of we need to be praised for this, or there needs to be something in return. I'm getting something out of this. Self-righteous service also gets us into the mindset of we pick and choose who we serve. Oh, well, if I serve them, that's going to help my name. That'll help me at work. If I serve this person, it's going to go a long way. Or, well, if I help them here, they'll help me here. Or things like that. Self-righteous service is also affected by our moods and our whims. Are we on a spiritual high? Are we going to get involved because now we're doing this? Or well, hey, I can do this. I'm feeling good. Let me go serve now. But if I'm not feeling good, if I'm going through tough times in life, I'm going to withdraw from all of these things. But most importantly, what we see from self-righteous service is that it's temporary. It's pretty conditional of, is the timing right? Does it fit my schedule? What am I going to get out of this? So what we see that Jesus starts to lead to from true service is that it doesn't come from human effort of making sure that I plan all of these things, but it comes from a relationship with God. Because what we see from our relationship with God is that he urges and he prompts us to serve in all different kinds of ways. Where we start to have those just little inklings of like, oh man, like at the grocery store, right? Oh, I can return your cart. Seeing an older person, hey, do you need help lifting that into your car? Do you need help with anything? He starts to urge and prompt you. Maybe you're at a restaurant. Hey, I'm going to leave a bit bigger of a tip for this waiter or waitress. You start to just get these urges and these prompts that is in your relationship with God as you're growing. Service starts to just become this lifestyle where it just starts to happen. True service, we also serve in the small ways. Self-righteous service requires the big ways, the bright lights, all of the attention. But the small ways are there is no attention, there is no result, there is no reward. We're serving in secret, as opposed to needing the rewards and the results. We also serve all. We're a servant to all. We aren't picking and choosing who we serve. We're just a servant to all people. It isn't based off of how we're feeling. Is it a good season of life? We serve faithfully through everything. But most importantly, while self-righteous service is temporary, true service is a lifestyle. And that's going to be the biggest thing that we get to the heart of. So let's do this real quick, Howard. Let's go back to self-righteous service. Self-righteous service. We're just going to sit here for just a second to let people either write or take the picture of this, and then we'll go back to the other one here in a bit. But self-righteous service, what we see from all of these things is that we're missing the lifestyle part of it. Because again, the discipline, Ben, is something that we intentionally do to grow closer with God. If you missed that inside joke, every time I see Ben now, I just ask him what a discipline is and he repeats it back to me. So that's why I called him out. He thought he was about to have to say it, but I wouldn't do that to him. But he was ready. He popped up. He was ready to go. But so what we start to see then is that this discipline is something that we think that we're serving someone because we're picking and choosing when it's most convenient to us. Now again, at the end of the day, service is still service. Okay? Like it's not, hey, you still serve, right? We're happy for that, but that doesn't make it a discipline. That doesn't make it the part that's helping you grow closer to God. What's going to make it a discipline is when we go to true service. So if you could flip back to true service now. For us is that when we start to do all of these little things, when we start to serve without thinking about it. That's the difference right there. The coming from the human effort for the self-righteous is there's a lot of planning that goes into it. Prep, is the timing going to be right and all these things. But the true service is just on the whim. Right? All of a sudden, oh, hey, so-and-so needs help. Perfect. We call them, hey, how can I help? Those types of things where it's second nature now of just becoming a servant. And making that a part of our life in the small ways, in not needing the rewards. We don't have to tell anyone that we did it. We just do it. But most importantly, we become a servant to all. Because what ultimately we're going to see is that there is going to be a difference in choosing to serve versus choosing to be a servant. So skip ahead two here, Howard. Thank you. We'll go back to that other one here in just a little bit. But the difference is that there's going to be a difference between choosing to serve versus choosing to be a servant, because there's going to be a difference. Servant is what's ultimately going to make this a lifestyle. When we choose to serve, we're still in control, and we still dictate all aspects of it, of when I do it, how often I do it, what I have to do when I'm there. Now, again, is there anything wrong with choosing to serve? No, not necessarily. But the discipline of service is us choosing to be a servant means that we lay everything down to God. We are giving complete control to God. In the Bible, there's this phrase, it's called a bondservant. And so what a bondservant would be is a bondservant is someone who is free. So it's a slave that's free, but he chooses to stay and serve. So what we see in Romans 1 from Paul here, he says, Paul, a servant of Christ Jesus. James, in James 1, it says, James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ. What we see from Peter in 2 Peter, it says, Simon Peter, a servant and apostle of Jesus Christ. What we see from Jude is Jude, a servant of Jesus Christ. And then what we see in Revelation, it says he made it known by sending his angel to his servant John. So from Paul, James, Peter, Jude, and John, we have five people who were close with Jesus, have taken now, it's not just a servant, but the translation of the word from the Greek into it is bondservant. So they have chosen this title of someone who is becoming a slave to Jesus Christ, but is free and is choosing to stay and serve out of love. So they are choosing to stay and serve out of love and loyalty to Jesus Christ. But most importantly, that this is the title that they have chosen and the lifestyle that they have chosen. This is what they want to be known as. This is how they have started all of their letters, have included that word in there, because they want the world to know that I am a servant by choice, that I'm going to do whatever it is that Jesus tells me to do. I'm going to serve anyone and everyone in whatever capacity Jesus Christ is telling us to. So you ready for the part that God's wanting to speak to you today? Because God is getting pretty sick and tired of his people showing up to church and expecting him to wash their feet. You have a choice to make. Are you coming to church to sit at the table with Jesus because you think he's going to wash your feet? People come up, want to complain about the music, what was said on stage from the pulpit, the ministries that a church does or doesn't. They want to say that they aren't getting fed and all of these other things. That makes church about you. That's you coming to church saying, Jesus, you better wash my feet. But we have to be a servant to all. When we come to church, that is our time to come and say, you know what? We're going to worship Jesus. We're going to sit at this table. It doesn't matter whether he washes our feet or not. We're here to serve. Because we have made ourselves bond servants to Jesus Christ to say, you know what? Because if Jesus can't trust you to come here to serve and worship him, how's he supposed to trust you to serve and worship him in the community? If you're coming here thinking he's going to wash your feet, how can he trust you to go out there thinking you're going to wash someone else's feet? If you want to come to church and start to complain about the people coming here, about how these people are doing all of these things, Jesus isn't going to be able to trust you with the people who aren't believers. But we're called to be servants of all. So for us, we start to have to make this discipline of service our lifestyle, our title, and our choice. Because if we were to say, you know what, I'm going to serve Jesus with everything, we'd start to watch how we can start to change the community. Because you know what? There's something different about us. There's something different about North Star Church. They're worshiping Jesus Christ. They're living in this discipline of service of they want to just serve the community. They want to be a servant to all. And so that's the difference between choosing to serve and choosing to be a servant. Because choosing to serve, again, there's just so many things of, well, it's not the right time, or I'm going through this, so I can't. But being a servant means I've made it this lifestyle and I don't have a choice. I don't get to determine when I do it. It's when God tells me to. When I feel those urges inside of me that God is moving me to serve someone. And so a slide from a little back is that service is what ultimately leads to humility. That this is going to be the true discipline that leads to humility, because let's face it, there's no real way to practice humility. There's really not. You don't get to just walk around and be like, I'm going to be more humble today. Look at how humble I'm being. I'm really good at being humble. But what we see is that if we really become intentional about making this service our lifestyle, and we begin to humble ourselves before all people and saying that there isn't a job that I'm not willing to do, there isn't a person that I'm not willing to serve, humility is going to naturally start to happen. So we deny our desires to be seen and recognized by everyone else and say, God, I want to be your servant. God, I am choosing to follow you with whatever you're telling me to do. I'm giving it all up. Lord, when you tell me and where you tell me to serve, I will be there, because that's more important than anything. So we as a church are going to start to make service our discipline so that way we can become and have this lifestyle of service. In it, he talks about how there's these seven different types of serving that become part of an essential part of what our lives are, that as we grow in the discipline of service, these are the ways we're going to start to see it. And so the first one is the service of hiddenness, that when we do things, it doesn't need to be seen or known. It also then involves a deeper devotion from those serving and being served, and that love and compassion are felt when served and hidden. Because let's face it, if we as a church are serving someone, but they know that we're doing it with ulterior motives because we want to be seen and known and all of these things, it doesn't feel as genuine. Or when you know that someone's going to ask for something in return, there's just something about it. But when someone knows that you're not there for attention, you aren't receiving a reward, you aren't receiving praise or anything like that, they're more drawn to what it is about you of, why are you doing this for me? Who am I that you would do this for me? Or the different levels of love and compassion that they get to feel that when we're just serving them in hidden. So I'm going to start to challenge us to just start to do some of these small things. And that's the next service, the service of small things. That as servants of Jesus Christ, there's nothing too small for us to do. That we also see that all of these small things start to add up. People start to take notice of all the small things that we can even do for them. But also what we see is that small services can make someone's day. That could just be the smile that they needed. That could be the one thing that maybe they were stressed about, even though it was a super small thing, and that was just what they were looking for. But so there's a bunch of small things that we can do in hidden to help people start to experience God in new ways. We also see that we have the service of guarding the reputation of others. Service of guarding the reputation of others. Because what we see is that gossip and negativity destroy the church. It destroys the other people, but it also destroys yourself. You see, we can always get into the weeds about what all of this stuff is, but naturally what we see is that gossip would be pretty much anything deemed untrue. So there's times where you'll be talking with your friends, and there's different levels of being able to sort of vent and be able to talk about things. But then also you have to remember at the end of the day that they're people. That they're a part of the church. They're a part of our community and all of these things. And with that, and it destroys us. It destroys us. What I was talking about even just in the funeral yesterday is that the anger and the resentment that we can feel towards these other people can start to fester and lead us down roads that we don't want to go down. Roads that aren't going to take us to good places. But let's face it, we've read it even throughout Paul's list that as we create the factions, as we create these even just the groups that lead to the destruction within a church, that it could take out the larger things at play. And so if we just removed even all of it, if we just said, you know what, God, how can I start to serve this person? And even as I sit here thinking that, I'm like, oh man, could Jesus wash the feet of Judas? Judas. I sit up here thinking, man, how do you ever get to a mindset like that of you've betrayed and hurt me, but I'm supposed to wash your feet after you've walked for 2 miles in the sun? But I think if that's what Jesus is calling us to do, finding ways to serve each and every person, that's our job, that as we come here, we are one flock. We don't get to pick and choose which sheep come here, which sheep eat from the grass and drink from the water of the North Star Church. We're one flock together, and it's our job to be one unified bunch moving forward. That's why we want to know, grow, and go, and develop disciples who know, grow, and go, and why we want the church to be filled with families being transformed into disciples of Jesus. That as we move forward in that together as a flock, removing all of the gossip and the negativity and saying, you know what? That is a sheep in the flock that we all are saying, you know what? We want to be a part of. We're going to further this together, and we're going to grow closer together through serving one another. We also see that we have the service of common courtesy. Service of common courtesy. He even wrote in the book, it's as simple as acknowledging other people exist. You wish as a pastor you wouldn't have to come up here and preach to just simply acknowledge that other people exist, but here we are. The service of common courtesy, just a wave, a head nod, making eye contact, smiling, saying please and thank you, the small appreciations, even the just being a decent human being. The bar is pretty low when we talk about making service our lifestyle, but it's even in these small ways that we can make people feel welcome in small gestures. Service doesn't always have to be this big thing. But service is a part of a lifestyle to Jesus Christ is just acknowledging they exist, the small please and thank yous, the appreciations, and the being a decent human being. So the common courtesy for us is we're going to continue to become examples of Jesus in small ways for people. We also see the service of hospitality, of we're hosting and we're welcoming. We're focused on being intentional to build community together. And so some people have this gift. It's the gift that people have of being welcoming and intentional and leading people into times of growing closer to one another. We also see the service of listening. We see the service of listening, and I love what he had wrote in here. That's not a word. What he wrote in the book is that love for God starts with listening to his word, so therefore love for others starts with listening to them. So if we're putting the love of God starts with listening to his word, then we see that love for others starts with listening to them. So listening is what starts to allow people to feel heard, cared for, and loved. So service doesn't even have to be anything that we physically do for someone. It can just simply be to sit there and to listen. It could be as easy as that. Service takes all of these different forms and all of these different ways that we can start to do it. But none of them are more important than this last service, and that is the service of sharing the gospel. Because there is nothing more important than someone's eternity. It's as simple as that. There's nothing more important than someone's eternity. Because we're here, whether you've been coming a long time, you're newer to the faith or anything like that, we believe heaven and hell are real. We believe that those are the only two potential outcomes. That's it. No in-between, okay, safe space or anything like that. So how could sharing the gospel not be the most important thing? If the alternative for them is hell, an eternity away from God the Father, how could you ever get to a place of being complacent enough to not want to pray and fast for someone? If the opposite of going to heaven is going to hell, that's their eternity. We have to start to have this urgency and this desire and this almost craving to just simply pray and fast that people would experience the freedom in Jesus Christ. So for us, when we talk about becoming a servant of all of, that means sharing the gospel, furthering the kingdom. That's why we do the 1, 2, 3 months to keep that at the forefront of what our job is. That's why we have the invitation Sunday next Sunday, because it's our job to invite people in, to help people experience Jesus in new ways. I'm going to invite the worship team back up. But so for this week, as we and continue to start implementing service into our lifestyle, start to find small ways to serve other people. Start to work on even the acknowledging the other people. Start to figure out just all of these different ways that you can start to even maybe share the gospel with the people. Begin to pray for people. There's so many different ways that we can start to work on this service to make it our lifestyle, but it starts with a relationship with God. Because if we don't have a relationship with God saying, you know what, God, I want to be this bondservant to you, we're going to struggle with serving other people. But if we can learn how to serve Jesus, it's going to start to become second nature and learning how to serve other people. So Heavenly Father, this morning, we thank you that you are worthy of our love and adoration, that you are worthy of being this bondservant, of choosing this life of serving you. So Lord, may you give us a heart and a desire to grow closer to you in our relationship with you. Lord, would you help us to learn how to serve you so we can better serve other people? Lord, we don't want to just choose to serve. We want to choose to be a servant of all. So we thank you, we love you, and we pray these things in your name. Amen.